This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. A week after the violent clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia, between Nazis and anti-fascists, the streets of Boston, Massachusetts were filled this past Saturday with tens of thousands of protesters denouncing white supremacy. The Boston March was organized by groups like Black Lives Matter to counter a planned rally by white supremacist groups, but the counter-protesters entirely overwhelmed the hate groups with their massive presence. Meanwhile, in the nation's capital, a number of organizations also marched over the weekend to protest the American prison system, calling it a form of legalized slavery. The Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March was aimed at drawing attention to the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, as well as racial disparities in policing, sentencing, and police brutality, and the use of prison labor. Joining me to talk about both of these is Layla Aziz. She's the co-director of media relations for the I Am We Prisoner Advocacy Network. Welcome to the program, Layla.
Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with Boston. That was the big one over the weekend. You know, photos of aerial photos of the streets of Boston showed wall-to-wall people. And we know now that they were mostly all anti-racist protesters. In fact, I had a hard time finding any images or photos of the white supremacist groups that showed up. What to you was the significance of this Boston march and how people showed up to very explicitly say no to racism and white supremacy?
One thing that the massive counter-protesters did is demonstrate that the left is organized and they have a message. I did see one image of the actual, I think they were called the Free Speech Coalition, something of that nature. They were kind of in a little cabana. It might have been maybe 24 of them. And then there was an incident where one of the counter-protesters was asking one of the initial protesters to leave. And it really demonstrates how the left has come together, multiple organizations, many times putting their differences aside to unite under one cause. The Confederate statues and the memorials, those are symbols of racism that it looks like, well, to me personally, that is being resurrected or not as institutionalized. It's now coming out and it's back in your face like in the 60s. So it's some really scary things going on right now.
And what do you make of this use of free speech to broadcast hate? You know, the idea that that free speech was really what they were discussing, you know, and the whole presence of the white supremacist was under the framework of free speech. I mean, why have a march for free speech when we already have a legalized system that protects free speech? Obviously, they weren't there to talk about free speech, right?
Right. Well, one thing is free speech, but there's penal codes in almost every single state, county, and city, and it's against terrorist threats. And those penal codes are utilized during speech, and that can trigger a felony. And I know numerous people who have felonies due to a police officer saying they said something to them, and that was a terrorist threat, and now they can no longer get a job. Many times cannot vote if they've done prison time in California specifically until they're off of probation or parole. So this free speech, for years I've been dealing with terrorist threats. So when I see a Nazi say we should exterminate the Jews, we should kill all the black people, to me that's a terrorist threat. And many people of color and poor whites are put under that mandate of terrorist threats that get us into the criminal justice system. So why all of a sudden is this First Amendment free speech something that hasn't been practiced this entire time? There are a lot of felonies that need to be wiped out if that's the case.
And I want to get to the links between what happened in Boston and what happened in Washington, D.C. But staying on the Boston March, presumably a lot of there was such a huge turnout because of the violence just a week ago in Charlottesville, Virginia. But Layla, do you feel that the left also bears a little bit of responsibility in ignoring the issue of racism? For years before Trump came on the scene, Racism, and even actually before Black Lives Matter burst into the scene, the issue of racism had been considered something that was less important than, say, economic justice. You know, Barack Obama's election was seen as this culmination of all the progress we had made on racism. But we've never obviously dealt with the racist past, the origin, the white supremacist origin of the United States. And that seems to now be coming back to bite us, literally in the form of these symbols of the Confederacy.
Right. And one of the big reasonings that I look at that, and we both know that many times the people who have been fighting against these memorials and against the Confederate flags, I went to school in Georgia for a year, my 11th grade year, and every day I walked into school under a Confederate flag. And I remember banding with some of the students on why we need to get the Confederate flag taken down. And there's always been people that have demanded this. The problem is it's tyranny of the majority in America. And until the white left really takes up a cause and amplifies it, we're ignored. So we definitely, it's not lost on us that all of a sudden that Trump is elected, we have people that have not heard our screams for decades and decades. I was born in 75. A lot of these were erected in the 60s or the 50s or the 20s. And we've been crying out against these since they were actually erected or put up in schools or government buildings. And because our voting block is not as strong, we tend to be ignored. Now, I'm not saying that we're not going to take the help now, but the irony is not lost on what exactly happened. And it really is an organizational mechanism to get Trump out in a lot of the national legislatures. We know this. We do understand what's going on, but we hope there's some learning that goes along with it too.
Let's turn to what happened in Washington, D.C., the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March, smaller march than Boston. And I think what you just said may be a reason why that was a smaller march. You know, maybe when the white left sees prisoner rights as just as important as many other issues, we might get a bigger turnout. But that march for prisoner rights was based on wanting to abolish the 13th Amendment. Now, filmmaker Ava DuVernay recently did an incredible documentary about the 13th Amendment, simply called 13th. But for those people who haven't seen that documentary, explain what is the 13th Amendment and why were you calling attention to that?
The 13th Amendment was actually a compromise as it moved through the legislature and had the states actually ratify the 13th Amendment. And I think it was taken from the Northwest Ordinance. And on there, there's a clause. So it says that slavery is abolished and indentured servitude is abolished unless you've been convicted of a crime. And then we get to some other parts on due process and duly convicted of a crime. And there's issues there on what duly convicted means, because the criminal justice system is not as friendly and as blind as many would like to believe. That's why they're saying that there's about 130 people just on death row that are innocent, just by doing statistics and looking at all of the people that have been released through places like the Innocence Project and the work they do. So, when we look at the 13th Amendment, we see that what it did was created a criminal class, which was a slavery class. So we still have not abolished slavery. Now, there are arguments, well, don't commit a crime. And our argument in that is, what does committing a crime have to do with being enslaved? In Great Britain, they have prisons, but they don't have slavery. In France, they have prisons, but they don't have slavery.
So what is the difference between the British prison system and the U.S. prison system that leads you to call the U.S. prison system akin to slavery?
Well, slavery is not legal there. So the ramifications that go along with being enslaved are not there. So basically, once you have been convicted of a crime, the 13th Amendment triggers a lot of other, even up into the 8th Amendment, for cruel and unusual punishment. The standard is less for prisoners. So when you have slavery that is legalized, you have a whole assortment of ramifications, like Florida, the fact that if you have a felony, you can never vote for the rest of your life. Those are the ramifications of slavery. So what you have are the Black codes and the Jim Crow laws and those different things being institutionalized in the 13th Amendment. And that has nothing to do with crime or public safety. It's slavery. And those are the things that we're speaking. We want safe neighborhoods. We want public safety. And in actuality, the prisoners who began the Million for Prisoners Human Rights March have programs that they're implementing in their communities to make safer communities. So those aren't things we're against. We are against slavery. And that's something that we're trying to get people to understand. outlawing or abolishing slavery is not going to affect any of your quality of life, but it will affect the quality of life of people who were currently enslaved.
So tell us what happened on Saturday. Who were the organizations involved? What were some of the issues that they were linking together to make their voices heard?
There were almost 100 organizations involved, and the message was to abolish slavery. There were a lot of intersectional attributes that came with it, from prison slavery to police brutality, police murders, to women being in prison, to inhumane conditions in prisons and jails, things of that nature, to families wanting to maintain their communication with their loved one who is currently incarcerated. So you had a lot of different experiences come together for one message, and that's to abolish the 13th. We want a new amendment that will probably mirror the human rights, the Declaration of Human Rights from the UN. And that's just basically slavery is abolished, period.
And so were there people who also had personal experience with the prison industrial complex, either loved ones of those who are imprisoned, who pay a very deep personal toll, or even formerly incarcerated people?
Yes, Mala Devine, I believe he did 17 years in Virginia. Mm-hmm. He is on the executive committee for I Am We. He spoke. Ramona Africa from MOVE, she was there. She spoke. The Angola 3 from Louisiana, that are now the Angola 2 because one of them succumbed to cancer, they spoke. You had Kalaika, who spoke from George Jackson University, which is actually run by and was founded by members in California who did 30 years and 19 years in solitary housing. So you had the voices of prisoners that were amplified during the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. And it was actually constructed from a political prisoner. This is his brainchild, and that's SJ.
I understand that in Florida, just days before the march this past weekend, the 97,000 inmates in Florida prisons were all put on lockdown. One organization, at least, the Prison Abolition Prisoner Support, in a press release, connected that lockdown to this march, the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March.
I saw that, and it demonstrated to me the fear that goes along. Why is there so much fear when it comes to slavery? And that really kind of touched my soul and made me want to look deeper. I know that Florida is going to be a hot spot. It's going to be a hot spot for 2018 and 2020. Right now, you have the Florida Restorative Justice Committee that is moving to give back the voting rights to many of the former returning citizens who have not been able to vote. And so what happened was Hillary Clinton lost Florida by 12,000 votes. Florida, the amount of people that are disenfranchised are 1.5 million. So you're going to see a lot.
Because formerly incarcerated, because felons are stripped of their voting rights, yeah.
Ever in Florida, yes. So what you have is probably about, if this bill passes and they can get this and the people vote for it, what's going to happen is I'm estimating about 1.2 million people will now have their voting rights restored. And if the organizing goes on in Florida like they're planning to do, that is a state that's going to be a rough state for Trump to then have again. He only won it by 12,000 votes. Look at Michigan. Michigan in Lansing, they did a Million for Prisoners Human Rights March. And Lansing is another one that's going to be a hotbed for actually getting that state to sway, because I think Trump only won that by less than 10,000 votes. So what you're going to have are the progressive left who are going to start paying attention, because what we are mobilizing and organizing benefits them. And we do understand that, but we're going to keep our message clear. We're here to abolish the 13th.
This is an obvious question, Leila, but I think we should spell it out anyway. Can you make the links between the white supremacist organizations, the hate groups that have come out in full force now that are saying we will not be replaced, that are both anti-Semitic and anti-Black and anti-everyone who's a person of color? Can you make a link between them, these sort of people who are protesting the Confederate statue removal, and the fact that our prison system disproportionately incarcerates people of color, in particular African Americans?
the Nazis, as I like to call them.
Yes, I like to as well. Let's do that.
I believe that they are not as populated as we believe they are. They were able to mobilize for the rally in Charlottesville. They also are from a class that actually can be in prisons. So a lot of them are poor whites. And poor whites have a history of indentured servitude and slavery in the United States of America. Not mostly slavery, because when they went to prison after the 13th was actually written, most of them stayed there where the blacks were sent to the plantations to work. But as far as being a slave class and being overpopulated in prisons, poor whites are there more than middle class whites or upper class whites, just not at the numbers of blacks and Hispanics. So basically what you have is a fringe group who they themselves, you have one guy who got fired from his job at a hot dog stand or something, a hot dog company. I mean, how much money are you making? So, but the thing is, their blame is against blacks, against Hispanics, against anyone that they believe that is taking a job from them. And it totally makes no sense. It's been like that forever. Racism in the South, the Ku Klux Klan, you did have judges and sheriffs, but you had a lot of poor white people who basically didn't think that they could go higher except for to step on a person of color. And or Jews were the reason why they were impoverished. And when we really look at that, sometimes I can't take it seriously. Even though it's a threat, it's a physical threat, because they will hurt someone, and I have children. But as far as their mobilization, how can I say it? The biggest threat is Trump. The fact that Trump has given them a voice, the fact that Trump wants to or seems to want to maintain this voice, this radical, what do they call it in the Proud Boys, Western chauvinism. Trump believes that the white male is endangered. And the way that he is actually facilitating his presidency demonstrates that he is looking to keep the white male elevated and believes they are an endangered species.
And of course, it's no surprise that Trump is promoting the tough on crime approach, which will only end up, encouraging police brutality, putting more, having more black and brown people be arrested and incarcerated. They want to do away with sentencing reforms. I mean, that's all part of his white supremacist agenda.
Well, Trump has gone on record after the Central Park youth that spent years in prison for a crime they did not commit, and he took out an ad in the newspaper to basically kill them. When the Innocence Project got their verdicts overturned, Trump still said he didn't care. He thinks they had something to do with it. So not only is your president choosing to assist in the facilitation of people being in slavery for small crimes, nonviolent crimes, victimless crimes, over-sentenced for actual crimes, he's okay with innocent people being in prison. And is on record saying that.
Yeah, this is the Central Park Five case, in the case of the woman who, the female jogger in New York, New York Central Park. Well, Leila, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. For those people who are interested in joining the work that you do on the abolition of the 13th Amendment and prison abolition work, where can they find out more information? Is there a website you can recommend?
Yes, you can find us on imweubuntu.org. imweubuntu.org, or on Facebook at Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March.
We'll post those links on our website later today. Leila, thanks so much.
Thanks for your time.
My guest is Leila Aziz, co-director of media relations for the I Am We Prisoner Advocacy Network. And we've been discussing a couple of marches that took place on the East Coast this past weekend against both racism and the prison system. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.